You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 29 June. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Nikunz from Sanlam will be talking markets with him. We've got Rushil Jina from AfriFocus on their managed tax-free savings account and Keith McLachlan from Alpha Asset Management. We're going to talk the non-linear nature of assets and how we structure that into a portfolio. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Basil Reed, CEO, foresees revival of the company. And Business Day, SA on borrowed time as budget leaves credit rating companies unconvinced. Morning markets in the US on Friday, it was red across the board. S&P 500 off 2.4, NASDAQ off 2.6. Asia is red with Sydney off 1.9 and Tokyo down 2.1%. Commodities all green, gold moving up again. Oil, the exception with Brent and West Texas, both down just over 1.5%. The Rand, 17.30. And top 40 opening call, looking for a red opening, about 0.4% down.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now.
With Simon Brown.
On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Nikunz, he's a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, morning, appreciate your time this morning. We saw, as I said in my intro, US under strong pressure on Friday. This morning we've got Asia green. Our market's not quite so much. Pretty much we had a red second half of the week last week anyway. We kind of preempted the selling in US and Asia over the weekend.
Now, Simon, good morning. Yeah, a bit of a cautious start to trade this week. Don't forget, of course, Friday being a holiday of the US, with Independence Day, so a bit of a shortened week, so to speak. We've obviously got the key payrolls data on Thursday, which is typically your jobs Friday, getting that a day early. So a bit of risk possibly coming in this week. So there's definitely a cautious feel about the trade this morning.
Yeah, and we've got U.S. consumer as well. We've got, obviously, PMI starting to come through on Wednesday. Our GDP number for the first quarter coming out tomorrow, I think there's two key points to it. One is it's going to be a horror show. Two is it's for the first quarter. In this COVID-19 world, data 3 months old is really history. We don't do a flash GDP, so it's going to tell us something which we've got way bigger issues.
Yeah, look, that's half the problem we got with the corporate earnings now when they're reporting to, sort of in the March 2020, it's pretty much obsolete. You can't even look at those numbers anymore, and things are changing from day to day. Yeah, South Africa GDP due out tomorrow, they're expecting a quarter drop of 4.5%. I would say that's wildly optimistic, personally, even if it isn't the first quarter. It's fast-moving world at the moment, so, things are literally changing, as the English say, on the sixpence. You've got from one day to the next, whether it's people trying to follow the flattening of the curve or virus breakouts. It really is a very reactive market now, and I guess that's the term I've been using with clients. We are reacting to every data point now, and it's quite difficult to even have a view on the markets more than a week or two out. It's difficult out there tonight.
Yeah, a week or two, sometimes it feels like lunchtime is lifetimes away. JSE, the share, came out with a trading update late on Friday. I suppose no surprises. With all of the crazy activity we saw March, April, and truthfully, to your previous comment, things are turning on a sixpence. They've actually seen good volumes. That is good for them. Of course, at some point it might fade away, but in the meantime, somebody's making money during a pandemic, and it is typically going to be exchanges.
Yeah, it is. I'm actually surprised that the JSE Limited wasn't up more, because we've gone from under sort of 20 billion value traded at the start of the year. So during the lockdown, jumping quite significantly over 20 on Sundays. I mean, 21 on Friday, I think 23 billion value traded on Thursday. I actually think it's doing okay. And certainly if you want to sort of almost hedge your bets, we've seen a huge increase in, I think you guys have been pointing out as well with retail clients coming in and increase of brokerage accounts worldwide. I think those JSC shares, it's almost if you hedge yourself and buy some of those as a little punt for your Monday.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And further to that, their cost base is largely going to be fixed. That difference from sub 20 to maybe 24, 25 billion, some bigger days, obviously, in the real smashdowns, that almost all goes to the bottom line.
Yeah, it does. Look, I guess the other side is you've got the sort of the trading brokerage generated, which everyone looks at on the one side. I guess people also keenly watch those weekly numbers to see what the foreigners are doing. I mean, normally up to 40% of our market is foreign driven, so also keep an eye on that one. But then on the negative side, you've seen quite a few delistings, which I guess doesn't bode well for fees from JSC. So you've got to find that balance in between. But I'm erring a little bit more on the sort of the optimistic side. I think those volumes will make up for a couple of smaller companies that we've seen leading the bulls recently.
That's a good point. A lot of the exiting was smaller. The other side of the equation, this is old Donald Gordon's business. It was Liberty, and then all the restructuring. And they came to the market in, what was it, early 2000s, maybe 1999. My chart is saying, correct, 99. And frankly, couldn't find a deal with the lenders. They were under pressure coming into the pandemic, and it pretty much looks like it is going to be game over. They've suspended, and as of Friday, they're in breach of debt covenants. And I suppose next step, break it up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at my notes that I'm making for my morning call after you this morning, and the one comment I made with a market cap of just 363 million rand, debt of over 100 billion, my comment was, it looks, as you said, the end is nigh. And quite a sad story, really. And I think they had problems going, before the sort of COVID lockdown. The retail space is changing so quickly, like we said, with everything else at the moment. And I think the demise just being accelerated. And I'll be very surprised, Simon, if it comes out of it to the other side, regardless of the quality of the holdings. I think that debt pile is crippling at 100 billion.
Yeah, I hadn't 363 million versus 100 billion. Yeah, you're not going to win that one. And it did. It came in late 99, hit a high of some almost 80 rand, sort of 2015, suspended trade on Friday at 29 cents. That's Nick Kuntz, Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, always appreciate chatting with you.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tax-free savings accounts been around, was it 2015? 5 years and some change. Nhlanhla Nene was our then finance minister when they got announced. AfriFocus have come out with essentially a managed product where they manage your tax-free savings on your behalf, kind of make it work. I've got Rashil Gina on the line. Rashil, appreciate your time. You're doing a managed tax-free account. What's the methodology behind this? It's rules-based. What sort of rules are you looking at to manage these tax-free accounts?
Okay. Thank you, Simon, for the invite to have this chat on the show with you. All right. So the methodology is very simple. As you mentioned, it's rules-based, it's systematic, it's quantitative, it's momentum-driven, it's aimed to actually maximize risk-adjusted return and minimize drawdowns. So there's a maximum of 5 approved ETFs at a time. You need to have a minimum of 100,000 in the account, and rates are constrained to 20%. So what this means is that 20% of the account value is allocated to an ETF at a time if it meets the selected criteria. It's suitable for investors with a high risk tolerance and those investors that don't want to be involved in the active investment decision-making process. So we all know that there's momentum in the market. So what this means is that a period of positive returns is followed by a period of positive returns, and a period of negative returns is followed by a period of negative returns. So this product is aimed to capture that. So let me give you a simple example. If the price is more than its 200-day moving average, then it allocates to the various ETFs. If the criteria is not met, then it allocates to cash. So as you can see, it takes out the emotional biases that are displayed by investors when they're selecting the different ETFs.
Yeah, that's a great point. Being rules-based, you're not taking your view on, there's an election happening in Europe or there's a pandemic or something. You're saying, I'm going to look at the price action, and if it's going up, typically that means it'll carry on going up, and you've got no bias. You just want to be in a position. You want to buy the winners, quite simply.
Exactly, and it results in a diversified portfolio, and it results in an effective product.
Yeah, absolutely. You say that you're going to hold five at a time and that you will hold cash as required. What is your rebalancing frequency? How often do you come back and recheck on those ETFs to see if perhaps one or two or maybe even all of them need to go out and replaced with others?
Okay, so there was a trade-off of actually capturing the momentum in the market and trading costs. So therefore, we actually selected a quarterly rebalancing aimed at minimizing the trading costs for the investors.
Okay, that's cool. I to take the point on that, too much frequency, also too much chop and turn. You've done some backtesting on it. You did some almost two decades of it. And certainly what the backtesting is suggesting, and because it's a rules-based, the backtesting is actually a fairly simple process, shows that it does work. It does give that enhanced return. And of course, some enhanced return, even if it's just a little couple of percentage points a year, you compound that over decades, you bring in the tax-free element of it, this is going to be significant in terms of long-term profit generation.
Exactly. So those alpha that we're actually capturing through a tax-effective investment, when compounded over the long term, can actually result in significant outperformance. So therefore, we are using tax alpha to add value to the investor.
Gotcha. Your universe of ETFs, is it all of the available ETFs that are allowed within a tax-free account? What's that? It's just over 50, 55 of them available. Are you basically looking at the entire universe and just picking those five that are doing the best?
Exactly. So we actually identify those ETFs that are approved for the tax-free savings account. And again, I come down to rules-based.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually helps an investor decide as to what ETFs to invest in based on the portfolio. It takes away that discretion. It actually is a great tool for the investor to select the investment.
This is obviously a managed product. As such, there will be a management administration fee. What fee are you charging the users on an annual basis?
Okay, so there is an admin fee of 50 basis points per annum.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned previously, there's brokerage. But because we chose a quarterly rebalance, so brokerage is only levied at the quarterly rebalance date.
Okay, so 50 points a year plus brokerage. There'll be some tour in there, but as you mentioned, only a quarterly rebalance. I've got to say, I like rules-based processes. I like momentum. This definitely appealed to me, so I wanted to get to have a chat on it. That's Rishil Jina. He's from AfriFocus, talking their tax-free savings account. Rishil, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Got Keith McLachlan on the line. He's from Alpha Asset Management. Keith, appreciate your time this morning. We've been chatting over the sort of last few weeks or so how things don't always go necessarily according to plan. You know, gold is up, the rand is weak, and that somehow gold shares are down. Scratching one's head, making no sense. I mean, in essence, what we're looking at is when we're putting together a portfolio, sort of take that longer view. Correlation of portfolio and the inherent risks, we need to be careful of being overly concentrated and overly focused in specific niches. We need to get that uncorrelated assets to reduce overall risk.
Absolutely, Simon. So the way I view it is picking investments is really hand selecting probabilities, but there's no way of doing it with guaranteed certainties. Now, portfolio construction is handpicking correlations. Once again, you're not guaranteeing outcomes, not guaranteeing probabilities, but by hand selecting correlations, you can at least arrive at best probable and risk-adjusted outcome. And what I really mean by that is the fundamental of portfolio construction is once you've found the investments that you like and obviously meet your criteria and you're comfortable with each individual investment in its own right, hand select the ones that have the least correlation with each other so that even if even if you are individually wrong with a handful of them, hopefully the weighted outcome of the portfolio still arrives at a good return.
That's a good point, because we're never going to be 100% right on everything. We're going to get some wrong. We need to sort of manage that process. Can we do this within an equity environment? I mean, if I, for example, and I'll keep it a very narrow example, if I've got a gold stock and a property stock, could I make the argument that the drivers of these two stocks are fundamentally different, and therefore, although they're both listed equity, they are going to be largely uncorrelated?
So absolutely, assuming you've selected them correctly, what you want to make sure at a portfolio level, and even at an individual investment level, but definitely at a portfolio level, that you're taking conscious risks. So the risks you're taking are ones that you're comfortable taking. Don't take blind risks. And I'll give you an example. You know, a guy in South Africa can hold his entire portfolio can be holding our five big banks. And he thinks he's diversified. Mm-hmm. He isn't. It's the complete opposite of diversified. His entire portfolio is, first of all, equity. You know, there's South African equity. And it is entirely actually banks, which, you know, some might outperform others over long periods of time, but largely they will be deeply correlated. So you want to hand select the correlations that you want to arrive at your outcome. Obviously, you want to marry them with your world, with your worldview, you know, your sense of what the outcomes will be. So, and this is where the discussion kind of shifts to understanding the difference between defensive stocks versus negatively correlated stocks, i.e. safe havens. And defensive stocks will have a correlation below one. So they will protect you in terms of downside, but it's not that they're necessarily going to outperform. Think of things like healthcare, hospitals and the like, even utilities. They're defensive. They won't necessarily lose huge amounts of value, but they aren't cyclical, and cyclical is correlations above one. Then you get negative correlation. And you touched on it right at the beginning of our chat. You said that, you know, market's currently down overnight, but gold is up. That's negatively correlated. So that, in the environment where the world is going poorly, those should outperform. And that's ultimately the difference between a safe haven asset, a defensive investment, and likewise a cyclical or high beta investment. Now, within the stock environment, the negative ones would typically be your gold stocks.
Mm-hmm.
But over short periods of time, they can absolutely have random walks, and correlations are also fluid, like we saw in March, where the entire world sold off, including safe havens, because in true market crashes, it's a rush to cash.
Yeah, in a true market crash, everything is correlated at one, and the only safe place is cash, which then brings me to my last point, is that we've been talking equity, and we could bring global equity into it as well, and that would obviously give us some more sort of diversification and lack of correlation, in a sense, or uncorrelated. We could also then, alternative investments. I spoke to a wine investor, Roland Pienz, on Monday. We had you know, ganders at barrels of Scotch malt, and we could have physical property. We could bring in other sort of asset classes to also further get that uncorrelated portfolio across an entire range of assets.
Definitely. So the traditional shock absorber from a traditional investor's perspective is bonds. But we've sat in a period where interest rates have fallen. Bonds have actually delivered equity-like returns, and it's just not sustainable. That's not what the asset class does over long periods of time. So there's definitely a growing focus on alternatives. And I go back to one of my earlier points. Each investment that you select has to stand on its own merits. But after it does that, your portfolio construction should consider how correlated it is to the rest. And the addition of alternative asset classes into a portfolio can materially offset correlations, i.e. risk. You're lowering the risk that the whole portfolio does badly. And hopefully a handful of them, irrespective of world outcomes, market outcomes, you know, central banks and pandemics and everything, hopefully some do well. And that'll offset losses on bad ones.
Yeah, and two key points I'm taking from this chat. Each investment still has to stand on its own risk. You don't come in just because you're uncorrelated. First, you have to be quality. Then, if you're uncorrelated, you can come into the process. And Keith made a critical point. Back in March and April, when markets were crashing, everything goes down except for cash, but everything, gold, Bitcoin, everything goes down simply because there is a rush to cash. Keith McLachlan, Alpha Asset Management, I really appreciate your time. Always enjoy chatting. That's it for the show today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 at moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. The podcast available where all good podcasts are aggregated from 7 o'clock. Chat to us on Twitter, on Facebook, hashtag MoneyWeb now. My thanks to you for listening. My guests for their time this morning, producer Cordora, sound engineer Eddie. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.